What's up, everybody? I'm back here on the Pitch Please podcast. It's Mike, and today I've got Natalia from Arki. Natalia, tell us a little bit about Arki and what we're going to be talking about today.
Hi, Mike. Thank you for the intro. Arki is an AI enhancement tool that empowers architects through referenceable design wisdom.
Sounds smart. It's got AI in it, so it's got to be interesting. I look forward to talking about Arki, but before we do, I definitely want to learn more about your background and your history. Maybe let's start with a little bit of where your journey started. You're in architecture and design as a startup, so I assume it started somewhere along those lines, but bring us back a few years to where your journey started.
Thank you very much, Mike. So yeah, I've been in Toronto for the past 10 years. I've been working on different firms, everything from small to large scale firms and large scale projects. And essentially, at the end of the day, I decided that architecture is a bit too straightforward. I love design, but I think that for me, I want to see a bit more tech integration in my day-to-day. So that takes me to today when we founded Arki and we provide software solutions for architectural firms.
So your background is in architecture and design. So you've done that for some time. You went to school for that. You worked in that in larger firms. And did you, I think you also worked, you know, as your own, for yourself as an entrepreneur in this space as well, right? Before Arki?
Yeah, that's right. So actually during COVID, I switched to work for a prop tech startup. And that's where I kind of got a flavor of the startup life. And there was a bit of a kind of combination of construction and software. That's what we were doing in this property tech startup. And essentially, I was the architectural lead there. We would design and build and implement some software to kind of speed up some processes. And it was very interesting journey, and I learned a lot there. And I tried to implement what I learned there and start when I started my own practice, essentially. I started my own practice right after I finished with that startup. And for a couple of years before starting Arki, I am just working on my own and kind of designing my projects and essentially, bringing to life all these great ideas.
So when you were in architecture and design, before this prop tech startup that you worked at, did you ever think you would be a startup founder or an entrepreneur at that time?
Actually, great question. So I've been always in this mindset. Since I went to architecture school when I was 16 years old, my ultimate goal was to start my own company. And I was going towards it throughout my career. And, you know, I moved to Canada from Russia partially because I know that here there are more opportunities for the profession, and profession of architecture is more straightforward. Kind of you kind of have your bureaucracy on one side, but then you have more opportunities because it's very well regulated as a profession. And essentially, every time when I would start a new job at a firm, I would always have this in mind that I still want to work on my own projects. I always was doing art projects on the side. So we would build art installations, and, you know, I would work during the day in the office and at night in the studio, building in the workshop and on the weekends as well. So I always had this mindset. And essentially, the only difference is that now we actually in a tech startup. So I never predicted that I want to be in tech. I knew that I want to do something on my own because essentially I think it's about creative freedom for me. And I wanted to have this independence where I can just like fully implement what I have in my head and like just build it and see it grows.
Did that prop tech that you worked at influence your desire to maybe explore the startup and technology side of architecture, or did that happen just independently?
You know, it's interesting because I had those ideas in my head before I started the prop tech startup, but essentially kind of seeing how in software you can do things so quickly and kind of build and break things very, very at the high speed. That's something that we don't really see in architecture that often because, you know, those projects, they take years. You create so much data, so much information. And sometimes, you know, you feel like you're drowning a little bit. And it's always like very deadline-driven business. So time for R&D and kind of implementing new tech or like exploring is not too much. Like you don't have that time. And then when I was in prop tech startup, I just saw how working with the guys who were building software, like little plugins for us, little like automation here and there, I just saw how much opportunity there is. Like when I say I saw, I kind of knew about that, right? Kind of, you always know that tech is like, you write the code, it's agile. But when you actually see it implemented, one day we talk about it, next day we have something working, right? Like, it's insane. And I realize how tangible and how much value I can actually bring with my past experience and bringing and building this multidisciplinary team.
That's cool. Now, you are part of Antler, and that might be different from some of the other founders that I've brought on before. Can you maybe touch on a little bit of what Antler is for people? Yes.
Antler is a day zero VC incubator. So essentially, they bring people to meet. It's 17 locations around the world, originated in Singapore and Canada now. Antler Canada now is starting their fifth cohort. So they've been doing it only for 2.5 years, basically. There are 2 cohorts per year. And essentially, it's a co-founder match platform. So they bring together half people at technical, half people at business, and there's a small percentage of so-called subject matter expert, where I can see myself as well. So essentially, it's lawyers, doctors, architects, logistics expert, you know, any sort of narrow vertical that you can imagine. And essentially, they put people together in this 10-week program, and you hopefully come out of the program with the co-founder and the funding.
Oh, wow. So I want to learn about that a bit more, but did you seek out Antler? Did Antler seek out you? How does that process work to formulate a cohort?
So essentially, the property tech startup where I was working during COVID was heavily tied to the interest rates, and you know, it's all about construction. The prices went up, there was inflation, so that company went bankrupt and they didn't survive. So in one day, kind of, we all were let go and no longer there. So I definitely knew that I wanted to continue this journey. And right after the company went bust, I went to the Antler website. Someone just told me about it. And I just filled the simple form, my name, my email, and I forgot about it. And essentially, like, months and months after, like, I don't know, maybe 7 months after, someone sends me an email. I'm in the middle of building my own projects, running my own practice, and doing all of this great stuff. And they just sent me a note saying, "Ah, Natalia, do you want to come for an interview?" And I'm like, "Who are you again?" Like, I completely forgot about this whole thing. And I'm always open to new opportunities. And I said, why not? I met with them. They were lovely. And then after a few meetings with them and also going there in person, seeing the space and meeting them, I realized it's a good fit.
That's cool. So they bring together a bunch of people. It sounds like you were either in the business side or industry expertise side. Yeah. But you're not matched with the co-founder right away. There's a cohort of a whole bunch of people from different skill sets. And do you first focus on, I assume once you're in the cohort, you're in. And then your purpose of that time is to either see if you can find the right co-founder match or the right business idea. How does that start? Do you start with the ideas? Do you start, or the problems, I guess? Or do you start with trying to find the perfect co-founder match?
So it's kind of like a, you know, chicken and egg situation, right? So when I came to Antler for the first interview, I did have several problems that I identified throughout my career, right? So the benefit of my experience is that I've been to firms, and I also worked in multiple countries. My bachelor's is from Russia, my master's from UK. I also worked in Spain. I did postgrad in Canada. And like, I saw the same problems in different size of firms, in different locations, different geographies. And like, you know, I knew that I have something to offer. There's value in my insights. And essentially, I came in with 5 problems that I kind of gently did research on. You know, I saw the competitors, like, I wanted to kind of do some work before I even joined Antler.
Yeah.
And then after, I wanted to flush it out with the co-founder and basically start working on this problem. So I interviewed with them and I presented these 5 problems, and that's essentially how I got in. Some people, they came without ideas. They kind of just free floating and looking for some other. So they always say founders first, But I think, like, if you have some sort of problem space in mind or something that you experience, something that you can validate or invalidate easily, it just gives you a head start because it's a very short program. So essentially, like, you don't have too much time to, like, play around and, like, investigate, right? It's only 10 weeks.
Got it. And so what happens if at the end of that 10 weeks, you don't come out with a co-founder match or a business idea? Does that happen? Like, some people, there is an outcome and some people, there isn't. And I guess that's the decision that Antler has to either fund or not fund. Talk to me about what happens if you are successful and what happens to those that maybe just didn't find the match or the business idea to work out on at Antler.
So I actually start from the second one. So people who did not find a co-founder or didn't land on the idea or couldn't validate it, they actually do not proceed after week 7. Week 7 is the first elimination round. They don't even go to week 10. Week 10 is the final IC presentation. The good thing about Antler is that imagine you're in a room with 65 other like overachievers, founders, people with great networks. So regardless, even if you don't get funding or don't meet your co-founder, you expand your network like crazy. We also have a pretty good, mentors coming in with even bigger networks. And, I think that ultimately everyone should be able to find value there, even if they didn't get the funding. And in case you successful in securing the funding, it's essentially going to a presentation week 10. First presentation, again, is week 7. It's kind of like a cutoff. You present. If you pass through week 7, then you go to week 10 for the final IC. And then you become Antler portfolio company. That means that they provide you coaching, guidance, and they essentially go with you through this journey of, startups. And you also get funding from them to kind of cover your initial costs and get you started.
That's cool. Now, the funding, is it standard? Like everyone gets the same amount of funding? And is the funding towards the idea, towards your co-founder wages, towards both? How does that work? I've heard some elements of how this works for Antler, and I think it's pretty interesting.
So the funding is standard per location. Different locations of Antler would have different size of check, slightly different terms. I think it's just the local geography and how each fund is set up. Right. And essentially, I think they invest in founders. Again, the VC, right, you never know what exactly they invest in. They're not going to tell you. But I think that the most important thing is that you have the industry expertise or some sort of expertise to offer. And then you're also able to show that you're coachable, that let's say even if there is not too much traction yet, you started at week 1 at one place and you ended week 10 in a completely different place. This is a very important for them to see. They want to see that growth. And then also, I think the complementary skills is something very important because, if you're two business people, that's not necessarily something they want to see. I think those are the main points.
That's cool. So then you met your co-founder. You had a problem or probably multiple at that point, and then you sort of whittled it down. And this 10-week journey with Antler birthed Arki. And so now you're working on Arki. When you're graduating from that cohort and becoming a portfolio company of Antler, how close to what we're going to talk about right now was Arki? Or are you still in the market validation stage and you have a lot of work to do after week 10?
We definitely have a lot of work to do. There is always a lot of work to do. So where we started was a visual search engine for architects and firms, right? So it's a B2B SaaS. It's still B2B SaaS. We landed on this problem because we wanted to be able to make a larger impact because some of the other ideas, they were a bit more like maybe B2C, like a bit of a different direction. So that's why we chose Arki with Medi to pursue as the problem space. And then essentially now from visual search engine, we realize that searching and finding architectural assets is not enough. Now with AI and Gen AI and all the space developing, people not want to only find the assets, but they also want the software to kind of draw for them. And we realizing that Arki is not so much a visual search engine only, but it's more of a productivity enhancement tool. So almost like a co-creator that helps you draw.
Okay, interesting. So let's maybe start to talk a little bit about that. But you've obviously got a deep and rich experience in the space of architecture and design. Maybe tell us generally how this process works. Like what are the types of technology or approaches that people use in architecture and design? Because I think that'll help us figure out where you fit in. So just talk to us a little bit about the industry of architecture and design and the tools that are generally used or that you may have used before.
Very good question. So the industry is very interesting because, you know, you have to have a kind of creative side to yourself, but also a very technical side, because it's not only about design, it's all about execution. At the end of the day, we build buildings. That's the end product, right? And sometimes I feel we forget about it a little bit, right? Because by the time we get to site, it has to be a concrete set of rules and guides that people can use to actually construct the building. So in terms of the software and tech, you know, sometimes we hear, not my words, from some of the users, they say that construction and architecture industry is on average 25 years behind. And you know, we try to, that's where we tap in, kind of works well for us, right? So we can bridge that gap. And essentially, we use a lot of drafting software. There is a lot of like tools available for you, and the tools that we are using day to day. But in the same time, those tools are coming from slightly different, you know, kind of places and providers. Interoperability is a huge problem for us. There's all these things that you export and how they interact between each other, which we're also hoping to solve with Arc as well. It's almost like that glue that you apply on top as a top layer, and now it plugs itself into all these pieces of software. And essentially, I think the challenge is that every time you start drawing the project, you kind of start from a blank slate. Even if your firm exists for 10, 30, 50, 60, 70 years in Toronto, we see a lot of these firms that existed for decades and decades. At this day, we don't really use any of the past knowledge, right? The past knowledge kind of sits in your principal's head, on your head, and it would be measured by the number of years you spent in the firm. But in reality, you have the servers full of this data that is completely dead data, and it's not been used. So every time you start drawing something, you reinvent the wheel. And we kind of learned that through the interviews. It's not something that I said, it's something that our users said. And a lot of people struggle with it. They, you know, up to a point where they leave the profession because they feel like they don't have resources for them to actually help and support them. Especially if you're a junior, you know, there would be an instance where you sit in your desk and your principal tells you something like, "We've done it before. Go look at this project." And you're like, "Okay, what is the project number?" Because it's all like codes and, you know, file structure is very kind of complicated. And they give you the code. You try to find the project. You can't find it. You go talk to 10 people in your office. No one knows where it is. And you end up spending hours and hours just searching for something. And by the time you find it, it's a completely wrong detail or completely wrong piece of information. So now all the time is wasted. You still need to produce the detail, but you kind of like run out of the time allocated for it already. Happens all the time. So essentially, we want to leverage this unused data. We want to tag it. We want to extract the metadata and attach it to every piece of visual information and let you search through it in a human navigated kind of way, like a Google kind of way.
This is interesting. So these are like, walk me through this. This is like floor plans, or is this like the structure and beams and electrical systems of a major building, or both? Like, where does this sort of fall?
Everything, yeah.
Okay. So any element of design, from like the floor plan of a room or a condo unit, to a full house, to a full building, from the interesting pieces to the design layout of something, to the maybe they're interesting to some, but maybe less interesting pieces of like where the HVAC systems need to run and where the electrical information needs to flow through the building. All of those elements are part of the design process that Archie is somehow involved in today.
I absolutely love, Mike, how you're describing it so well. It feels like you've done construction before.
I haven't. I like building things, and my brother's in the industry, so I think I just learned enough through osmosis.
That's awesome. Yeah, so essentially right now with our prototype, which is version one of our product, which is online, you can go to search.getarchy.com. And essentially, we loaded a bunch of floor plans, which are exactly like you said, condo floor plans, and you can search through them and kind of Google-like fashion, right? So each searchable unit will have a data attached to it, which was extracted from the floor plan using AI and machine learning. And essentially, the way you search is by the data that was read by machine, extracted from the visual data, and attached back to the data so you can find it and identify it. So we have about 1,000 searchable units there right now. We have thousands to go in a pipeline, kind of processing the data every day. And then from the floor plan, you know, this is just a kind of isolated scenario, just one of the, you know, tasks in architectural office to do. But in the future, we want to integrate details. This is actually version one. We're going to add wall assemblies, fire-resistant wall assemblies, code wall assemblies, construction details. That's going to be step two. And we chose that simply because our users keep asking about it. And we realized that this is kind of our next step to cover the larger audience and bring value to more users. But essentially, the goal is to have elevations, you know, site plan diagrams, schedules, all sorts of, you know, accessibility information, right? Accessibility diagrams. And so essentially, the we call it the wisdom hub. So whatever data is important for your firm, we want to be able to process it, digest it, and give it back to you in a very easy to navigate format.
Yeah, so you're basically able to take regular design files, and Archie's technology is able to quickly label all of those things in a structured way, which anyone that's from like the tech side, structured data is paramount to its usefulness in things. So what you're saying is you'll auto scan all of the files in whatever file format, and I want to talk about that in a sec, in whatever file format it is, and abstract, hey, here's a structured labeling process of a bunch of things we see in this diagram that maybe will want to be indexed and searched later. That's yeah. Like one key element today. You can just go do that in a couple clicks, some minutes, some hours, and then you've got a database of high quality labeled data sets.
Correct. Because today, again, if you're familiar with the industry, you can only flip through construction sets, drawing sets like this, page by page, physically. If you're doing it on PDF or on paper, it's still page by page. There's no way to kind of slice through this data and just say, I want this. And essentially, using semantic search, we want to be able to search by design intent. So even if I don't know what exactly I'm looking for, by knowing the stage, the type of the project, and kind of loosely where I'm at, I'm still able to retrieve the data. Because we realize that sometimes people, they don't even know what exactly they need. So there has to be like a really good search capabilities to offer them that expertise.
That's interesting. I want to come back to your flipping of the page by page. Obviously, I mean, maybe some firms still draw everything on paper, but now obviously people are using technologies to build and then print those pages. Are these like the Autodesks of the world that would be the types of software people use to design, or what types of software are they using to design these elements today? And where does that sit relative to where Archie plays in?
Great question. So the most common software today is Revit, which is BIM, Building Information Modeling software, meaning that every element in that 3D model carries a set of parameters. It carries information, then later you extract when you develop your model further in the stages all the way up to construction. In the ideal world, and some of the countries that are fortunately more advanced than Canada. Unfortunately, Canada is not there yet. They use these digital models to submit for building permits, submit for municipality reviews. We still kind of here in Canada use BIM as a, you know, tool to draw, but maybe not tool to build or review. We still PDF everything. We kind of flatten those models and submit them as a PDF or a paper file. The second software that is commonly used is AutoCAD, which is something that is kind of like exists from 90s, right? It's not, or even 80s. It's a very kind of basic software in the sense that you draw line by line, and it's it does not carry any information rather than visual data. Typically, this is more used by engineers, right? Like mechanical, electrical, structural sometimes use it as well. But architects, especially in larger firms, mostly use BIM and Revit because 3D models proven to be more effective. When you get to construction site, ultimately you get less of the problems or errors or like those misunderstanding of joints, right? With the 3D, you can test it quicker.
Got it. And so does Archie sit as like a companion to this where it's like, hey, I want to reference something and I want to visually look at it and then go do my work? Or does Archie plug into these systems? Like, help me understand that relationship between those. It's obviously able to index your data and you can quickly visually reference it, which maybe that in itself is light years of value. And it sounds like it is, rather than flipping through pages and file drawers till you find something. But how does it translate to the design work in Revit or in AutoCAD?
I love how you completely understood what I'm talking about. And I don't know if I'm really good at explaining or you just have that background that you just got it right away. So I think that step one for us is to create the database of assets, and those assets would be coming through PDF, right? This is kind of our step one. We're a team of two. That's what we are working on today. And that already brings value. We have about 40 users on the platform testing it, kind of like seeing how it fits into their workflow day to day, sending us feedback, and we implement this feedback. Step two is the copilot. We don't really like the word copilot because it's used so often. We'd rather
say Microsoft, so I hear it every day.
So we kind of call it co-creator in a way that, imagine you're inside of the drafting software and you have Archie plugin, which is already installed on Revit. And then as you draw, you can ask the co-creator on the side, what did we do last time when we done this type of project? Or let's say if you draw in details and last time you drawn a certain amount of information for this specific type of construction, the copilot can just suggest, okay, you're missing this one more detail. We did it last time. Just kind of take a look at this. And essentially the idea is that instead of going from zero to 100, copilot brings you to 50 and then you take it through 50 to 100. Like, I've been to so many meetings where people come unprepared, not because they want to be unprepared. They just don't know how to like find this data, right? Like, why don't we take the past project, and if we've done 10 schools and we now build in school number 11, why don't we just take some of this data and just print it out before we come to a meeting or show it on the screen, right? And then now instead of us sitting together just talking about it in isolation, kind of from complete like blank slate, now we actually can look at some examples quickly, we can put them side by side, compare, see what works, maybe for early stages, recycle some of this work, and kind of for us to move forward, right? And ultimately step three for Archie, what we see kind of years to come, is the generative AI component, right? So how can we take what's standard for each project? Like, I don't wanna say standard, but there's always gonna be some overlap. Your foundation wall in certain location gonna look pretty similar. Your slab for the parking gonna look pretty similar. So how can we take the parts that are similar or typical, and then how can we generate the stuff that is unique per project with the AI? That's essentially kind of core drawing is the step where we go in the future.
I don't know if this is in your roadmap, but I think it just hit me. The power of Archie is also to be able to, like, at some stage, do design reviews and actually quickly flag potential issues.
Yes.
So if I'm like a city or municipality, I imagine there is massive backlogs of elements that need to go through review. And you still need a person that's going to make the final judgment call. But I can quickly see how if Archie is able to index files and index standard approaches, how you could very quickly point out, hey, you probably need to do a full design review, but here's the 50 items that look wrong on jump that you should start with in this project. And people are able to very quickly go into those things. Is that, you're smiling, is that already in your roadmap, or are we building a roadmap real time right now? It just feels like so logical based on what you're saying.
It's again, it's funny that you mention it, because actually that problem was one of the five problems that I came into Antler with. We just didn't go ahead with it as a beachhead simply because working with municipalities and the cities, it's a bit of a different beast. We don't want to go there yet. But in the future, that's something that is definitely on our minds for sure.
Okay, so this maybe brings up the perfect question. Who is your target market today and where are you starting? Who would use Arki generally?
Very good question. So we started with architects simply because this is my ecosystem. This is the stuff that I know, and we very quickly start talking to architects. You know, from day one, we've been conducting 4 or 5 interviews a day until we hit like 60 interviews. We didn't even touch solution space. We mom test them, we build all these jobs to be done, you know, diagrams, and we ask all these general questions not to, you know, bias them. And essentially, architects is who are using our software today. But, you know, in the conversation with investors sometimes ask us, they say, architects are proven not to be the best users because they don't want to pay. Essentially, the TAM is massive, right? The total market is consisted of engineers, urban designers, urban planners, interior designers, anyone who touches the visual data, anyone who touches the drawings is essential our customers. Architects is just what we know and where we start, but ultimately we spoke and interviewed the mining engineers, structural engineers, interior designers, and they all have the same problem.
That's interesting. So it can scale to all of those because you're pulling similar data. So an interior designer might use it, but also an engineer, but yeah, also the architect. So it doesn't need to change for each audience. You can be pretty broad in who it can support.
Yes, because essentially, Mike, we're building a framework. It's like we're building a system. The whole goal of this operation is to recognize the patterns, right? How can we find those commonalities and how can we find the unique parts? Because one of the things that architects challenge us today on is that every project is unique. You don't need the library to build because every time you draw, things are completely different. But I argue with that because there's always going to be things that are very similar. You're not going to reinvent how you put your grab bar for barrier-free washroom. You're not going to reinvent how you tile your bathroom. You're not going to reinvent how you do your door jamb or window seal. It's not like 100% true. So that's why, you know, coming from a bit of a founder mentality and from a startup background, I always try to challenge it. And sometimes they tell me, I don't have a problem. They say, you know, I don't have a problem finding information. I just need to go talk to Alex, then to Mark, then I talk to Anna, and then I just call to my colleague who is for 2 years has not been with the company, and I just ask them. I don't have a problem.
Yeah. How long did that take you? Exactly. I think like the other interesting part here too is all those elements you're talking about, there's also this element of binding this to local business of building codes and, you know, like for the design, what's appropriate for a certain location based on building code, what is the, you know, in the same way you're searching, oftentimes not efficiently, through building codes against diagrams, and does something that a design element you're using, does it work? So where are you at today? So you've been with Antler as working on Arki for how many months now?
So we basically started Antler in September last year.
Okay.
We formed a team with Mehdi pretty quickly, and we started working on Arki in October. Okay. And we graduated from Antler in December last year. We built our first prototype in 4 weeks and we released it at the end of January. So users been testing it for like about, I think, 6 to 8 weeks now, depending on who joined earlier. We have 2 design partners. One of the design partners has been working with us since October. So very early on, they've been with us pretty much the entire journey. Super, super helpful. And we have more partnerships that we are now signing and kind of moving to the next stage.
That's amazing. So you're sort of past the working prototype. You've got technology that now works. You've had users that are testing it. You've validated this idea and the need. So you're kind of like MVP, but now going into commercialization, it sounds like. Like you're going to start charging for the product. You got enough of something here that there's immediate value for people. And now you're about to go seek out for paying customers, or are some of the customers paying customers today?
We basically have the customers kind of paying with their time. We don't really, we didn't ask them for compensation. For us at this point, the users, their time is more valuable, right? Because without their feedback, we don't want to be building in kind of this like dark room and this isolation, right? We don't want it to be building just for me or based on my experience, right? So instead of asking them to pay the subscription early on, we'd rather ask them to kind of sit down with us, because these people are super busy. You know, architects, they're always kind of running around. There are always things to do. So for them to actually sit down and allocate an hour every 2 weeks or every 3 weeks, and then give us feedback, engage with the team, spread the tool, talk about it, it's way more valuable at this point than paying, you know, the subscription fee.
So maybe that's a perfect next question, which is like, what is the how you charge? Is it by user? Is it by firm? How do people pay for Arki, and what's that business model sort of look like?
Very good question. So we spend now hours and hours, interviewed maybe around 200 architects in the past 6 months. And essentially, we realized that on average, about 4 hours per week spent on searching and trying to locate work and kind of like missing. And some people told us it's way more, but we are being a bit more conservative and we're staying 4 hours. So 4 hours per week turns to be about 2,000 hours per year. And then 2,000 per hours per year, it's a full-time employee, right? So full-time employee has a certain salary attached to it. And then the way we think about it is that if you gain additional team members, then for this additional team member, you have to buy a drafting license. So we put Arki in the same cost as the additional drafting license for that one person that you gain. And this is for a cluster of 10 people. So each cluster of 10 people are going to gain additional person, and you just need to buy Arki as a drafting software for that additional team member.
That's cool. So you kind of like, hey, per 10 employees or 10 team members, you get one instance of Arki. So if you're a firm with 30 people, you would get three licenses of Arki and something of that nature, and you would assign them.
And we did that because the average size of the firm in North America, it's 12 people. So we actually structured this way on purpose. And we also, after spending a lot of time with our users, we realized that, you know, 10 is a kind of cluster that it's either one big project or two smaller projects, so cluster of five. But 10 is a good way to break the larger studio into kind of more smaller clusters.
That's cool. So what's been like the hardest part of getting this going? I mean, your timelines, you've worked on this pretty quick. You've got rich industry knowledge. What's been like the challenging parts of this?
So something that I'm hard at work and together with Mehdi, it's the data security. So every time people hear AI, and this is not exclusive to architects, all the entrepreneur portfolio companies who we graduated with, it's the same question. Where is my data going? Who is going to be using it? Who's going to be benefiting from it? How are you training your AI? Is it going to be data cross-contamination? What is the standard? And, you know, for us being very early and not having revenue yet, going through SOC 2 process and getting the ISOs, we want to do that, but we are not able to do it just yet, right? So how do we convince them that the data is secure, but in the same time, not going through this expensive process just yet, right? So essentially, we set up a pretty robust system with the access control. So each firm would have their own login into our web platform. Each user would be under umbrella of their firm. And then the data that firm loads, it's only belonging to them. So no one else, like for example, if you log in now, you won't be able to see the data of our design partners. But our design partners, they see their own data, which is labeled as them only, and they will see all the open source data that's already there on the platform.
Got it.
And yet, like, this is a barrier that's very hard to break today, because We ask the users, let's start small, give us some data, we process it, you build the trust with us, and then we do more. I think that just there is a bit of an AI scare in the industry in general, and I think it's not so much they don't trust us. It's more like they just not sure about AI in general and how the industry, where it is going. In the same time, I actually received a report yesterday from Royal British Institute of Architects, and they are talking about AI and they are talking about opportunities. And there is a lot of conversations going. People are interested in learning. It's just, I think it takes a bit more time to actually, from just learning, turn into doing and implementing day to day.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I'm from a technology background. I lead app innovation and AI at Microsoft. So I know this pretty deeply. But I think the punchline is all these things that people hope in terms of how you create dedicated instances, security, where and how things benefit from the model and, you know, are anonymized and your data remains secure and isolated, and all those things are possible. I think it's just education. And it sounds like your challenge is educating an industry that are not tech first and, you know, are used to flipping through pages that, yes, I need this thing that's going to help me. And your pages that are normally sitting on your desk that anyone could come in and take are sitting in an area that's far more secure and far more isolated. But it's like educating on how that works is going to be a piece of what Archie will have to do, which is we have value. Now we also have to do this extra layer of technology education to help simplify that down to gain confidence from maybe some people who aren't as close to this. And I imagine there's early adopters that are like, I don't care. This is modern. I'm rolling with it. So you'll have like the two tiers within your space, I imagine.
Yes, 100%. And those are the early adopters that we are looking for, right? Like so early, those design partners are people who are really interested in making a progress and really interested in making a difference. And they don't really care about like the nitty gritty of it, right? And those are the people that we are partnering with right now. And, you know, we had instances with larger firms who were super interested, but then because of their own internal bureaucracy, because of their own internal processes, they said, you build it first, we are not ready yet, and we will, like, talk again when you guys have the software, we're just gonna, you know, subscribe. Which is also fine, you know, we understand it exists, and this is their own internal setup.
What's been the most fun part for you? You know, you have a background in architecture and design. You worked at a prop tech startup. Now you're going on this journey building it yourself. What do you think has been like the most exciting or memorable thing for you so far?
I think for us, one of the first interviews that we ever done, one of the first discovery calls, we asked very general questions like mom test, right? What is the worst part of your day? What do you hate the most? What is the most annoying thing? And literally one of the first user interviews, someone spelled out the exact solution that we have as a hypothesis in our heads, and they said, we are currently looking to buy this today. And that was mind-blowing, because for me, it just, like, I never wanted to say that I know it all or that I know this industry so well. I've been to the industry, I have some insights, but I don't know all about it, right? Like, this is not possible, I'm just a human. But then when you hear it, someone just spelling out what you just kind of put on paper 5 minutes ago, they just say it word by word, and they also attach value to it, saying that we are currently researching for this tool. I think that's when we decided to partner, and I think that's when we decided that's what we're going to be going with, because this experience was just kind of out of the body experience. It was like, we got it, like, we understand what it means, what are we actually doing. And I think day-to-day, just learning, right? Like building product. I don't have any product experience. Mehdi, who is my co-founder, he's very well-versed. He's full-stack software engineer, but he also built many startups and also led a large team of engineers. So he knows product, he knows the business side, and he knows technical side. So we basically meet together, kind of join forces at the product, right? Because this is so niche that we need my expertise to kind of hammer it down, but we need general product framework to productize it and make a thing out of it, right? So I think for me, learning, it's very hard because as an architect, you know, I'm used to kind of knowing the answers, certain answers, and being in my field. But here it's almost like every day you have to be like, oh my God, what is this about? How does it come together? So it's very challenging, and I like it because I feel like I'm growing.
I like that. And so as part of that growth and journey in like the startup world, which is obviously not, native to how you used to work, what's sort of like the thing that you feel has been the best advice someone's given you, or the best advice you'd give someone now having gone through it, looking to move from maybe a traditional business or industry into the world of startups, which I think makes very rich startups, right? You've got deep industry knowledge. For someone that's like you that has deep industry knowledge or works in a specific industry that's looking to make that leap, what's like the best advice you've received or some advice you would give?
I just want to echo what you said, because we always think about themselves as both being builders, right? So Mehdi builds a technical in technical space, and I'm a builder in physical space, where the ideas then become reality through the construction process, right? So and that kind of like the balance that we found inside Aarki. In terms of the best advice, I think one of the things that I feel founders have a challenge with is not being able to present the product early to users, because some things are not working, it doesn't look pretty, it's kind of hard to justify sometimes why you did this or that. And I think pushing yourself and going and doing it very early and receiving this early feedback, seeing how people are interacting with it, tracking what are they doing with it, kind of like how they navigating through the platform. I think it's one of the things that intuitively, as an architect, I wouldn't do. But then the fact that we did actually brought so much value. And when we hit first 1,000 searches in our platform, and like for me, just seeing what are they trying to do with it, kind of on the background, watching it, that was mind-blowing. I think everyone should try to do that as early as you can. If you have those people around you who can trust you and dedicate their time and give you early feedback, that's just wonderful. I think that is hard to, underestimate.
Yeah, like the co-authoring bit and building it together in
100%.
some form. Cool. Well, if people want to find out more, I think we'll put everything in the show notes and link it. But I think there was a site you told us that would be the best place for us to find you. What are the one or two places you would recommend people go next and find out more about Aarki, or what next steps are to follow along on the journey?
Yeah, so we have our website, getarchi.com, pretty easy to, spell out and find us. You can connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active there. There's a lot of conversation now happening on AI and architecture. I try to participate in those. People asking great questions, and I think that's architects just so curious, and that's where all the information, all the kind of interaction happening. So definitely follow me on LinkedIn and send me a note, connect. We also have a newsletter that you can subscribe, also on our website, and you can stay in touch and kind of get all updates. We release a lot of demos. We're building custom GPTs on the building codes that are going to be part of Aarki in the future. So if that's something that you're interested in, we already built a BC building code GPT. It's already released. You can search for it. And we're going to be releasing more. So sign up for the newsletter if that's something that you want to test out.
I love it. And I think the other one you mentioned earlier, because I opened it up when you said it, was it's still at getarchy.com, but it's search.getarchy.com. And that's really like a cool way to play around and fully understand a little bit about what Aarki's building for the everyday person or maybe an architecture firm. So we'll make sure to link that. Natalia, thank you so much for joining us today. I had a lot of fun learning a little bit more about your space, even about your Antler journey. I think that's going to be a really fascinating one for a lot of founders or prospective founders to consider and think about. And looking forward to seeing your journey over the months ahead.
Thank you so much, Mike. Appreciate it. It was a great chat. You know so much about construction. I don't believe you ever, never built anything.
We'll see. Maybe I'll be able to build a lot more if I get something like GetArchy. Thanks everybody for tuning in, and we'll catch you on the next episode.